here we go. WTC is back on the air. We Talk Comics. Episode 17, as we present the 2011 We Talkies in the comic book category. I'm Mo, and of course, there's four members of our podcast, and there's a superhero team some of you may have heard of called the Fantastic Four. Now, the Fantastic Four coincidentally has how many members?
I'm going to have to say four.
They have four members, you say. We have four members, and they have how many?
Four.
Four. Gotcha. Now, Fantastic Four apparently has four members, much like us. So what we'll do is we'll introduce ourselves by telling you which member of the Fantastic Four we are. And, of course, going to open up with my buddy, Brett.
Okay, you know, I know this is going to sound a little bit strange, but when I think of myself in the Fantastic Four, well, I'm going to go with the Invisible Woman. And the reason that I'm going with the Invisible Woman is because she is the most powerful character of the Fantastic Four, but very few people actually realize that she is. And that's just like me.
Plus, you got those lady parts. Keith, which member of the Fantastic Four are you?
I'm going to go with Power Man.
No, Fantastic Four.
He was in the Fantastic Four.
No, there's four members. You know what I mean. Don't screw with me. I'll get Brett, the most powerful member, cut you right out of this podcast.
And see, there you go. That's why I can do that.
What member are you?
I'm going to be Mr. Fantastic because I'm the brains of the operation.
All right, Chris. What member of the Fantastic Four would you be?
I'm going with the Thing. The rock solid, just there in the background, always good for backup.
All right, well, I'm also the Thing. So can we do that?
No, that leaves you with Herbie.
No!
Well, Tom DeFalco had the She Thing. You could be She Thing.
You know what? He could be She Thing. I'm the most popular member of the group, much like the Thing. Now, I have no empirical evidence to back this up. I'm just guessing.
You're definitely the hothead, man.
that would be true. I am the hothead, which would make me Johnny Storm. All right, so that's Brett, Keith, Chris, and Mo, your hosts for the 2011 We Talkies. But first off, we're going to introduce ourselves with our regular ongoing segment. Keith, known on Twitter as @CubReporterK, and this is the weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
Well, coming out of Christmas, there are a few announcements that have been happening. Dark Horse is bringing us some creator-owned work coming up. Peter Bagg will be doing a new title called Reset, which is a fantasy book about virtual reality. It starts in April. No word yet on whether it's probably a miniseries. That's what Peter Bagg's been doing a lot of. No specific number of issues was given in the announcement that came out. And Mike Barron and the artist Badger are coming back to Nexus for Dark Horse Comics Presents in May. That title's been running on and off for 30 years now. And they're continuing the same storyline. No reboots here. It's just business as usual for Nexus. The early numbers on sales for December show that Marvel has regained its market share in units and dollars, keeping in mind that Marvel continues to flood the market with about 20 to 25% more books than DC publishes. Our next episode will have some of the more specific numbers of where the books place. These are very, very early numbers. The biggest news just came out yesterday is that the mystery woman from the New 52 number ones is named Pandora. That is the full extent of what DC has said today. And they showed a photo, and her name is Pandora.
What's the photo look like?
It's a sketch of the character. It's a sketch we've seen before. So there's no context to it. It is Jim Lee's, or whoever designed the character. It's their design sketch that has turned up before, and that's all that was that's all the text that was posted with it was her name is Pandora. And
I've seen that sketch, and let me tell you, I wouldn't mind getting into Pandora's box. Heyo.
There were some jokes about that in the Legend of Pandora. The only thing left in the box at the end was hope. I suspect that hope is Wally West. He's trapped in the box. That's why we don't have him.
That could be.
No. The hope is the hope Cable's daughter, Hope. This is this is set leading into the really giant DC Marvel crossover that's going to end both universes.
The new 132?
Yes.
I'm all for it. All right, continue with your news.
And one last thing. There is a Venom mini-event coming up called The Next Big Thing. And the concept of it is that it's an update of the new Fantastic Four story from, that would have to be 1990, that had Wolverine, Hulk, Ghost Rider, and Spider-Man become the new Fantastic Four. This is an update using Venom, Red Hulk, X-23, and the newer female Ghost Rider.
Okay, wait. Now, if you were a member of that Fantastic Four, now forget it.
Venom. I'm sure. As fast as I can, just Venom.
Everybody's rushing to not be the Red She-Hulk.
Now, at a time when a lot of people are asking if Marvel's ever going to get out of this point one stuff, they are doubling down.
Oh, no.
The Venom mini-event will be numbered 13, 13.1, 13.2, 13.3, 13.4, and 14.
What? That doesn't make any sense at all.
I'm assuming that parts 13.5 and 13.9 will be coming later.
The only thing I can think of is, like, 2 years from now, how am I going to figure out the order of all this crap?
Well, you use math, Chris.
Oh, yeah, no, but you get 13 and then you forget. Like, you have to actually remember there's a 13.1 and a 13.2.
Well, and the concept of these is supposed to be that they're jump-on points. I find it really hard to believe that parts 2 through 5 of a crossover will all be jump-on points.
Wow. Well, let me tell you, there's been a few books that I've read that are supposed to be jump-on books that I had no idea what the hell was going on lately.
I would like to jump on them. Just, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I'll jump on them. I'll throw them over a cliff and let something jump on them. But, yeah, absolutely horrible.
And
anyways,
that's the news.
That's the news with Cub Recorder K. Anything to say on any of those other subjects there, Keith? Or Chris? Or anybody? Or Brett?
I think we said it all.
Yeah.
I just want to add, Pandora, how boring. I mean, if somebody was to force me to guess before they announced this, I would have guessed Pandora. Just pretty predictable and boring.
I thought it was their Harbinger character that had been in the previous Infinite Crisis and Crisis on Infinite Earths. I figured it was a reboot of her, so it still may be. I mean, it would not surprise me. So we'll see what's going on there. So now that the news is over, we're going to jump right into our Wii Talkies 2011. And how many members were in the Fantastic Four?
Well, and on occasion there was five. But
four and a half.
What we're going to do is...
Four and a half.
And there is
Who?
Four and a half. Yeah.
Four and a half. Franklin Richards wore a t-shirt that said four and a half.
What did it say on the cover? Did it ever say four and a half?
Well, it'll say, but four, actually, it'll say 4.5 now.
Yeah, in one case, though, like the 4 was crossed off and a 5 was put in.
Well, that's right. There was. Yeah. That's awful.
Well, when it was the anyway. FF, it could be any number that started with an F. It could be the Fantastic 44.
Yeah. Or the Fantastic 52 if Marvel got a hold, or DC got a hold of it. Anyways, here we go. We're going to talk about the 2011 Wii Talkies and open up with... Best Artist. So I'm going to open this one up here, and I'm going to choose Ivan Rice. He is my choice. Ivan, I hope that I'm pronouncing his name right, R-E-I-S, Ivan Rice. He's the artist currently working on Aquaman. Previously, he's worked on Brightest Day and Blackest Night, a lot of work in the Green Lantern universe. Worked with Geoff Johns almost exclusively over the last few years. I can commend his work. I've always been a big fan of it, but what he did with Aquaman, taking a character who certainly it's an interesting costume, but it's a costume we've seen so many times and still made it look dynamic and new and fresh, really blew me away, and I think he's the best artist of the year. Brett, your choice.
That's an interesting choice. I'm going to go with Rob. No, I can't get Rob Liefeld.
You can't even finish it.
No, there's no chance of that. Now, anyways... you know, it's interesting because I'm going to give my runner-up to Clayton Crane, because I really, as much as I enjoyed his stuff in Carnage USA, I went back and read Carnage, and I actually thought his work there was really good. So he's but it's because Carnage USA, I thought he took a little bit of shortcuts in a couple of cases, so I'm going to give him my runner-up. But I am going to have to give my my Artist of the Year to Lee Bermejo for Batman Noel. I just I really like the art. I think it's beautiful. And, you know, whether or not the writing stands up is beside the point, but for the art and the look, I think it's a beautiful book.
Chris, your turn.
All right. I actually thought of going with Batman Noel as well, but I realized something. This isn't a fine art competition. This is a comic book competition, and I thought the best work done was Rob Guillory on Chew. It's a little bit cartoony, but the style and the art matches so exactly with the writing style. The art adds giggles and laughs and inflections. The marriage between Rob Guillory and John Layden in the comic book is perfect. Really, the art is right in line with the comic book, and that's what a comic should be, and that's why I think it's the best art. Plus, although stylized, it's just beautiful.
Your turn, Keith.
J.H. Williams. His work on Batwoman is amazing. It's one of the books that I read most of my singles, pretty much all of my singles, digitally now, and it's the one that I've stopped getting digitally because I'm just going to wait for the trade. I know I'm going to buy it anyway. I might as well not be spending the money twice. Just gorgeous storytelling. I love it.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. I'll tell you what, Keith, this is you have to go last there, and that made you least important, of course. We'll actually make you most important on this one. Why don't you pick the next category for the Wee Talkies?
Well, we picked some of our own categories, so I'm going to go with what do you think the best movie or TV adaptation of a comic book was for this year? And I thought long and hard about this. There weren't as many this year as there might have been other previous years, but still we had a couple of really big name ones. I'm going to pick Captain America, the First Avenger. I just thought it was engaging, fun. Really liked the way that they developed the character and didn't overwhelm it with too many villains or what they usually do with these kinds of stories, and just told a full-on Captain America adventure.
Okay, awesome. Chris, why don't you pick one of your categories?
Sure. How about a best / most organic crossover? This year, I actually picked this category just because I am so sick of crossovers. All my regular storylines slammed to a halt, and I'm taken off on this wild multi-issue thing, and really, I just want to finish my story. But this year, we had a crossover, Spider Island, that felt organic to what was happening in the Spider-Man titles. There wasn't a lot of Deadwood. It involved me in a couple series that I normally wouldn't read. But due to the crossover nature, the crossovers, for the most part, were necessary and added to the story. I thought it was well done and actually got me excited about Spider-Man.
Okay, cool. Brett, your turn.
All right. Well, firstly, I'm going to agree with Keith. I love Captain America, the First Avenger. I think it's a fantastic movie. And anyways, my award, I'm going to go with my award as the best relaunch of 2011. Now, I am awarding this award, this Wee Talkie, to Beavis and Butthead, the TV show. That is by far the best relaunch of 2011. It's a funny damn show. It never ceases to make me laugh. And they go at Jersey Shore. And that's really important to me.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. You know what? And that's the thing about our own categories. We've opened it up so we don't just have to stay to comic books. And Brett made an awesome choice there. I love the Beavis and Butthead. Used to love it. Loved it. This come back better than it ever was. I still say the second part of the first episode, crying, funniest thing in the history. I almost died.
Their review of Human Centipede just had me on the floor. That was so
great. Amazing. It's just awesome. So I'm going to say my category is best potential, and that's the what happened either creator, comic book, anything this year which led me with the best potential for being fantastic in 2012 that debuted. And I'm going to go with something we've talked about many times in the past, but that's because I think it deserves it. And I don't want people to think we're just harping on this book for any other reason than it has that kind of quality. And that is the Red 10. Basically take your archetypes from DC and the Justice League, place them in the – and then there were one or 10 little Indians concept within from Agatha Christie. And you have the story with the greatest potential of any story I've read for 2012. I get the feeling by the time that this series ends, we'll be talking about it for years to come. So let's move on to the next category. And we're going to go into something that's the worst. And we're going to talk about the worst ongoing series. And for me, I'm going to go with Action Comics because of the overinflated, awful storytelling of Morrison, hampered by the art that is the worst art that I've seen the artist Morales do, combined with the worst dialogue since a Matt Fraction book. But we'll get into that later. Horrible, horrible. I'm not a fan. For me, Action Comics, worst ongoing series of the year. Brett?
Well, for my worst, absolutely, I'm going to, you know, again, we've got a couple from DC's 52 relaunch here, but I'm going to give the runner-up to Grifter.
We're doing runner-ups now?
I like to do – I've got some runner-ups. You don't have to do any. I'm going to give a runner-up to Grifter number four primarily just for the fight scene that's in there with Green Arrow because it's so ridiculously stupid and bad that any book that has that fight scene in it deserves to be on this list. But my number one, I have to go with Blackhawks because I don't think that I've read a book that was as stupid, inane, and just pointless as Blackhawks. I'm not saying that I had a great deal of...
There's no expectations, though. There's expectations for Action Comics.
Oh, very true. I'm not saying I had any expectations, but the thing is that it was so stupid that it went so far lower than my lack of expectations that I had to name... It was so bad, I had to name it the worst.
Brett, Blackhawks number one mentioned Calgary, where we're from. That's my defense for this book every single week when Brett slams it.
And it never works.
I know. Hasn't yet, but I'll keep using it. Chris, your turn.
Worst ongoing title has to be Hawk and Dove. I had no expectations, and it lived them down. It shouldn't have gone past the editorial stage. That's all I got to say.
But how could it not get better now that Rob Liefeld is writing and doing the art? I can't even do it. Rob Liefeld.
Keith, your turn.
Well, I want to say on Brett's runner-up choice there of Grifter, I will offer a reward to anyone who can explain the fight scene that happens in Grifter number four. That was the end of I had been buying that book. And that story the whole fight scene makes no sense.
You could offer James Randi's $1 million to anyone who can prove there's paranormal and stuff like that.
It makes no sense.
It's going to be the same thing.
Characters move 10 feet apart between panels. Green Arrow's arrow disappears and reappears panel to panel. Oh, it's a dreadful scene. The storytelling's so bad.
Did Liefeld guest draw that one? No, sorry, it wasn't behind schedule.
No, I could see feet. I'm kind of go with Mo on this that it's not just about being bad; it's about failed potential and not living up to it. And month after month, I keep hoping and hoping that Justice League will not suck. And month after month, nothing happens. The characters are terrible. There's a minute and a half's worth of reading. It's very pretty, but it's a pinup book, essentially. There's nothing to it. And I'm going to call it the worst ongoing just because I wish it was anything in there.
Awesome. All right, Keith, once again, pick the next category.
All right. Well, while we're on bad stuff, and then we can just focus on the good stuff, let's do the worst single or graphic novel of the year. And this one, it will be no shock to anyone what I'm going to select for this. Holy Terror. It's painful from start to finish. The only good thing about it is that it's hefty enough that you could use it as a weapon if you ever ended up meeting Frank Miller in person. It's just awful. And there was a time when Frank Miller was the top of the game, and that time has long since passed.
Chris, please.
We're single. The Ray number one. There is no reason for this book. It is politically correct. It isn't interesting.
So it's Holy Terror.
And they gave him a purple bikini costume.
But he was naked, really. It's a fake costume. He's just reflecting light.
You know what? That may make it better in your world.
It does. Wait. Is that out loud?
Yeah, that was your outside voice.
Oh, damn it. Brett, your turn.
Well, you know, Keith, you scooped me on it, but it has to be Holy Terror. I will never read a worse comic book. I certainly didn't read one this last year, and I can't imagine reading a worse one, period. Honestly, like you say, I mean, failed potential with Frank Miller and everything like that. It's a disaster from start to finish.
All right, you know, I have to admit, when doing this and coming up with it, I forgot about Holy Terror. And now I'm thinking I should add it in there. I think it was so bad that I put it out of my mind. It's like if you have some sort of traumatic event in your childhood, and you know, in order to save your psyche, you put it aside and forget it. It's like a repressed memory. Holy Terror is awful, but I'm still gonna stick with Captain Autumn number one, or Adam.
Adam,
thank you, Captain Adam number one. I still can't. That art is still burned in my mind of trying to figure out what the hell that first panel was. And it's just, art was terrible. Writing's terrible. Dialogue, pacing, mess. I've never read anything worse. I swear to God, the only reason that it is my worst book of this year is because it was so bad, and it's not ongoing series. It's because it was so bad that I didn't read 2, 3, 4, 5 and never will. Awful.
I would still way rather read Captain Autumn.
I still would think that I still enjoyed the art styling of Holy Terror more, but they're both terrible. Terrible.
It would have been my runner-up.
What, Holy Terror?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Captain Anna? Adam?
Adam.
Yeah, terrible. All right, man, let's move on then to something positive. Clean the palette a little bit, and let's go Best Writer. And when I talk about Best Writer this year, my pick is Scott Snyder. For his excellent work with American Vampire, creator-owned a Vertigo title, adult series. And then he can also turn around and do mainstream superhero work. Has excellent characterizations, pacing, and dialogue. A versatile writer who's young and only getting better. Scott Snyder is my pick. Brett?
Well, Scott Snyder is my runner-up in this case. I thought he did great work, but my Best Writer is really came out of nowhere for me. It's going to be Jeff Lemire. His work with Animal Man is...
Brett, I was going to consider him, and then I remembered that he wrote Frankenstein, Agent of Shade.
Well, I put that out of my mind because, honestly, I thought so much of Animal Man that I was willing to overlook the bird liner that is Frankenstein, Agent of Shade. Because Animal Man is just doing so much that his work on... He's a really good writer for that series. Obviously not the other one, but for that one.
Yeah. Well, I guess if there's a difference between Best Written Series and Best Writer. And because if it had been Best Written Series, I might have gone with Animal Man. But it was Best Writer, so therefore it was Scott Snyder for me. But anyways, let's move on. Chris, it's your turn.
For me, Jonathan Hickman. This has been the Jonathan Hickman year for me. His work on Fantastic Four and the FF has been phenomenal. I never thought anyone could get me interested in the Fantastic Four, but he has. He's done some really complicated nonlinear stuff that just blows me away, issue after issue. In fact, this year I've gone back and read just about everything he's ever done, and nobody else even compares this year. Just love it.
You've done a lot of reading this year.
I have.
Especially since the last little while since you knew you were coming on the podcast, you went crazy. So
Yeah, I mean, it's only 3-4 days into the year, so, I mean, he's really...
Okay,
Brett's feeling a bit pedantic tonight.
Tonight?
Did I pronounce pedantic correctly, Brett?
Captain Autumn. I'm calling Captain Autumn just to piss you off.
That's, well, no, that's fine. I don't care. Go ahead. Call it Captain Autumn.
Okay, Keith, just jump in with your turn.
Mo actually just is trying to figure out what pedantic means.
Well, no, we got online dictionary. I'll look it up later.
And how do you spell it? Later?
I'll misuse it later.
Yeah.
Well, I'll misuse it to people as stupid as me, though, so they won't know. Anyways, Keith, your turn.
My pick for best writer of the year. I just had to stop by a comic shop and pick up some physical singles because this writer has made a great offer over Christmas to sign comics on behalf of Comics for Heroes, which is a program that we love. This writer's Scott Snyder, and he's amazing.
Choice. I like it.
And I love all of his work so far and look forward to much more to come.
Awesome. Your choice to pick the next category is Snake Format Continues.
Is that me?
Yeah, it's you.
All right.
Unless you want to give Keith or Chris or Brett a chance.
No, I'll
no,
go.
It's your turn.
I'll go. Well, I'm going to go with the best event of the year. And this is a dicey one. I am curious what you guys say. And it was close for me, but I'm going to go with a controversial choice and say Flashpoint. I really enjoyed not necessarily the core book, but the crossovers, because it was basically a big Age of Apocalypse type storyline using DC characters. So a bit of a cross between, you know, Elseworlds or and Age of Apocalypse. It was tight. It was very contained. And I think it got a bit of the short end because it just fell right before the New 52.
Interesting. I'm guessing Chris would be going with Spider Island, but is that right, Chris?
No. I took event to mean something. Well, I broadened it a little bit. Fantastic Four 600, the big, really expensive book that brought back Johnny Storm. That was the best. I enjoyed it greatly.
Well, I haven't got one, right? Have you?
Well, you know, I would go with Flashpoint, if only to be able to say that it's a great event to be able to stop reading DC Comics.
There you go. Flashpoint is also my winner then. Chris, apparently we're doing our own categories, and Keith is bogarting all of our time, making us talk about his. What was another one of your categories there?
Did you just say
both? Another one? Oh, okay. Most unnecessary issue in a crossover. And this is what I'm calling this the Secret Wars 2 award, where we just have, you know, the Beyonder show up and all of a sudden it's part of the storyline. And I hate this about crossovers. I'm going with Black Panther 524. Part of the Spider Island crossover, which I said earlier, I absolutely loved. But this one issue has Black Panther with six arms, and he explains it away with, yeah, these things happen to superheroes. Although I enjoy the humor of it, we could have just had an editorial note on the first page, these events happened before Spider Island. There was no reason to include that in the crossovers. There was no reason to even give him six arms for one issue.
All right, Brett, your choice.
Well, you know, if this was 2004, then Avengers, we could do Avengers Disassembled, except we'd be doing 90% of the crossovers.
Yeah, except for Avengers.
Yeah.
Anyways, go on.
All right, I'm going to do... what I think it's kind of odd. It's kind of like a best storyline, and I'm going to go with something that Mo said earlier, and I'm going to, it's kind of a co-award in that case, because I'm going to give it to both Agatha Christie, you know, and the Red Ten, because the story came from Agatha Christie, but you know what he's doing with the Red Ten is so good that I do feel that it deserves some sort of wee talkie. And like Mo said, I really anticipate seeing where this is going. And I really enjoyed the book, so it deserves a wee talkie from me too.
All right, I'm going to talk about my most disappointing moment or event, and it was in the New 52. And there's, if you go back and you listen to the first couple episodes and you hear me talking about it, I wasn't as down on it. I was scared because I was a DC fan, but I wasn't necessarily down that it was going to be terrible. And I even look back and I don't think it's terrible. I stopped reading because so much of it was unnecessary, and it should have been 10 or 15 good books. And I just felt that it just disappointed me. I felt like they didn't want someone. I felt like they weren't trying to reach me as a fan anymore. And I felt unimportant to them. And so I was just really disappointed with that event. And that's my point on it. And, you know, too many books. They can't do 52 quality books, and Marvel can't do 179,000 quality books.
At this point, I'm wondering if they could do one.
Yeah, it's been a while. If it wasn't for Spider Island, everybody's bragging about, and I will be reading it at some point. Keith, you had something to say there.
Yeah, I put something down for the most disappointing moment. I was far more specific than you. The final page of Justice League number one, which was the first look we got at the Superman of the New 52. And I was excited about this because I didn't like New Krypton. I didn't like the direction they had been going with Superman. I was really into the idea of a fresh look at that character. And I hate everything they've done with this character.
And you know what? If I was to go back and go specifically, it certainly would be the end of that one. Because all my fears that I was worried about what they do to this universe, came to fruition in that issue. And when it was over, the 37 seconds it took to read it, when it was over, I was incredibly disappointed. But it unfortunately carried over and just magnified itself over the course of the entire 52 issues that I read.
Jeez, now, and if you're a slow reader, and it took you 37 seconds. Yeah,
we're
so
taking
Keith,
you 3.5.
Yeah, Keith, 10 seconds? Were you
doing? I actually, the clock actually had gone backwards by the time I finished that book. I had an extra minute of my life.
Wow.
It shouldn't be possible, but yeah.
I'm going to keep reading.
Brett, it really isn't worth it.
We should make it one of our regular books, just because that way it's not much homework for any of us. So... I guess it's, are we, what did we just do? Best overall event. So I guess it's back over to me. Let's do our best single issue. We kept on talking about the Red 10, but I'm going to give a shout out to another book published by Comics Tribe. For me, the best single issue I read, and coming off shortly after the events of 52 and where I went, that was better than any book in the 52, though there was some really good ones. For me, that was The Standard, written by John Leese, and I wish I could remember the artist's name, but it's by Comics Tribe. Simply a great twist, great art, writing, just the book that has made me hooked more than any other. Unfortunately, the three times I've purchased the book for digital download, none of the links have worked. So even though I don't mind supporting them three times, I'm looking for another option, but I would love to read The Standard number two if it was apparently physically possible. But it was the single best issue I read this year. Standard number one. Brett, your turn.
Well, I'll happily give The Standard number one my runner-up category. In this case, though, I'm going to go with Batman number one because I really, really, it was that one of those shining moments in the DC 52 relaunch for me. Now, the reason that I'm including it there is actually because I'm not that big a fan of 2, 3, and 4. I prefer number one to all of them. And that's one of the reasons why Scott Snyder's not actually the top of my list on best writer. But for that moment, I thought that was an amazing book. So Batman number one.
Chris.
You guys make some good points. I want to change now. Especially with The Standard. But I have down Batman Noel. We've talked about it multiple times. I wanted to hate it, and I ended up loving it. That's the sign of a good comic book to me.
Keith?
I also went with Batman Noel. It's a gorgeous book. So beautiful in the art. And I went out and bought the Joker hardcover that he had done previously as well.
Love this is it. A very Batman-centric award.
It really is a Batman-centric award. It really is, yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Batman to Wells, one of the big winners for the certainly one of the big winners for the year that way. Okay, Keith, why don't we move on? Next category would be what?
Oh, is it me already?
It's our last one of our own, I think.
All right, let's do the last one of our own. Well, I picked, my category is the best TV episode featuring Booster Gold. And I'm going to go with out of the wide field of one episode of TV of this year, of 2011, that had Booster Gold, of Smallville episode 18 of the final season.
I'm sure hoping he's not asking us to choose two, because we're going to struggle to find something different.
No, I would choose Smallville, episode 18 of this final season.
Excellent. Good choice.
I'll back you up on that. Didn't see it. Never will. But it was my favorite Booster Gold episode of the year.
I'm hoping that in 2012, we talkies will have a pilot for Booster Gold that we can be calling the best episode of the year.
The best single episode of the year?
I think all four episodes.
Screw it up before it ever gets to that point.
I think all four episodes will be great.
Based on their recent history of their pilots, I wouldn't count on that being the best of anything.
The number one thing is, I just want to like it. That's all I say.
All right. Chris, your own category.
Okay. Most unnecessary special issue or limited series. And I picked Marvel Zombies: A Christmas Carol. There is no reason for this book to exist.
Come on.
No. I mean, the writer has done very little in Marvel other than some fill-in issues with other creators. It's almost like somebody at Marvel had said, what do we have coming out with Marvel Zombies this year? It was entertaining. It's not a bad book, but it's not a particularly good book. It doesn't tie in anywhere. If it's a creator book, it should have been on Icon. I just saw it on the shelf and didn't understand even why it was there, other than as a cash grab, trying to cash in on the Marvel Zombies thing.
Keith, you seem to have a thought there.
And cashing on Christmas. I
hate Christmas.
I also had a book in this one, and this could have gone into Chris's other category of unnecessary issue to crossover, the Regenesis special, which is the bridge between Schism and the Regenesis of X-Men, was awful. It was so terrible, and it's about 40 pages of essentially Cyclops and Wolverine being the team captains in a grade school pick your teams issue. Nothing happens in the book besides they wander around at the island deciding who's going with which team. There's literally nothing else that happens in the book.
From the House of Ideas, huh?
I think it was about $8. And
oh my God.
I think a volleyball game is the most exciting thing that happens in it.
I'm going to pick 42 out of the 52 new 52. all right, Brett.
Just remember, every book is somebody's first waste of money.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, Brett, your turn.
All right, I'm going to go with the award of the Stop Playing in My Sandbox Award. Now, you know, my sandbox, I mean, it's a pretty broad sandbox. I mean, there's a lot of things that I like. I like movies. I like comics. I like some TV and whatever, what have you. But this is the award where I just really want these people to just go off and become an accountant or something. You know, stop playing anywhere near my interest level. Now, a runner-up for me is going to be Frank Miller because, you know, we talked about the Spirit earlier, and I don't like it. And we talked about Holy Terror today, and so I really want him to just stop and just go away. But the number one person that I want to stop playing in my sandbox is Kevin Smith. After watching Red State and realizing what a disastrously horrible movie that is, and knowing that he has similar interests to me and writes comic books that are not... He writes them for every company, it doesn't matter, and they're all bad. It just, they're like, he takes whatever character and they all suck.
I got something to say on that because Red State. Okay, I've never been shot. I imagine, though, if somebody shot me, say I was, like, working at a store, somebody came in and robbed me and shot me, that I'd sit there in pain, unable to move, so amazed that I had been shot, just in shock, just in pain, just holding myself. That's what I was doing while watching Red State. I couldn't move or stop watching because I was in too much pain. I was in shock. I was just, it was horrible. I was just trying to hold myself together. This thing was so awful. Anybody else have any comments on Brett's?
You guys are too mean. It wasn't that bad. I'm not willing to defend the movie, but it wasn't that bad.
No.
Yes, it was.
No, no. Afterwards, my first comment after watching the movie was that I want Kevin Smith to come to my house and hand me over the money that I spent to watch that piece of crap. And it wasn't a lot of money that I spent to watch that piece of crap, but I wanted him to deliver it personally just so that he would have to, like, spend the money to fly out here.
That'd be a great South Park episode.
And you know, Kevin Smith wrote an episode of Clerks where he made George Lucas give back the money for Phantom Menace. I think that could count as a legal precedent.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, so Kevin Smith, you know, it's your
I would turn. Like to talk more about that movie, but that would become a different show. So someday maybe we'll do some sort of show, a movie show, where Chris and I, and if Brett wants to get in, we'll really get into it and talk about how it's not that bad and how it's that bad.
Oh, great. Another show I get my ass kicked.
Well, that's your role.
Yeah,
All right, I'm going to go with mine. My just go away. Mine is final word is the just go away award. And I wish I could be more original on this. I really, really do. Because many people slammed him. But I can't. Because these are people, especially the one person who's the biggest star. But this is a group of people. They don't sing. They don't act. They have no conceivable talent. No reason to exist. And yet they're everywhere. They're on Barbara Walters picks them as among the most fascinating people there. Magazine covers. That's the Kardashians. Would you please just go away? I don't get it. You don't do it. If you did something and I didn't like you, I don't like Lady Gaga, but I can respect her talent. So I don't mind that she's everywhere. But she does something. You don't do anything. Go away. When we don't know who the greatest teachers and firemen, the guy who put the bullet in Osama bin Laden's head is. We don't know those people. They don't get much press. And this person gets this much press for putting on a fake wedding? Please just go away. All right, we're moving on then finally to our last category, and that's Best Ongoing Series. And I get to go first. And technically, I guess this is two series, but I would count it as one. And that's Jonah Hex / All-Star Western. I think that's the best ongoing series of the year. People look back. Among best single issues was, I believe it was issue 65 or 67. I wish by the top of my head it was. But many websites were listing the excellent work that Palmiotti and Gray and company were doing at the end of the Jonah Hex series. And then, of course, the exact same creative team takes over and continues to do good work with All-Star Western. So All-Star Western / Jonah Hex, my pick for ongoing series of the year. Brett.
Well, I'm going to give my pick for best ongoing series to Animal Man. I mentioned Jeff Lemire earlier. Now, see, here's an interesting thing, because you mentioned that Jeff Lemire, of course, wrote the Frankenstein. Well, of course, Palmiotti and Gray wrote the awful Ray series. So
yeah, I didn't think it was as awful as you. I thought it was just nothing to bring me back. But I will say this, though. I didn't pick something like Animal Man, even though it could have counted, because it's only five issues. I was looking for something that had lasted at least three quarters or more of the year, which is why I considered this to have counted. See, so those issues within the New 52, if it's three or five issues, or technically four issues came out, really, if four issues came out of Animal Man for, I didn't consider that to count personally.
See, the reason that I consider it to count in my mind is the fact that my expectations were so low for Animal Man. Like, I really didn't have that much invested. It was the last book that I read of that really, like, second week, because I didn't think it was going to be anything. And considering what he's done with the character and how relevant he's made that character, that's why it gets my top award.
Chris, your choice for best ongoing.
I'd like to acknowledge Invincible this year. It is top of my pile every month. It's the first book I read. It's the book I get most excited about. And I just want to acknowledge it before it jumps the shark. We've had a couple storylines end recently, and I'm not sure where it's going in the future. I'm sure it's – I want it to be excellent, but I don't know. It seemed to sort of end there, but this last year of Invincible has been incredible. I've loved it. So just thank Robert Kirkland. I love it.
Chris or Keith, I guess you're the main event in the final. We talk his 2011 award, best ongoing series.
All right. Well, I've got a moment right now that I've been waiting 4 months for. I knew this moment would come. Brett, Lemire.
Lemire, awesome. Thank you.
What'd Brett say?
Lemire.
Nice.
Yep.
Score one for Keith.
Hey, I'm just happy to know correct pronunciations. I don't care who gives it. I just want to know the correct pronunciation.
It's all about learning.
That's right.
I did ask my Twitter followers to pick their best series. They picked Daredevil. And I got to be honest, I got to give the series a second try because I did try the first issue, found it so bogged down in explaining away his unsecret identity that I just couldn't get through it. I didn't want to try another issue. But I will give it another try because it
Chris,
is being...
Chris likes that one quite a bit too.
Yeah, because Chris has been mentioning it a couple times as well. Yeah, I want to give it another try now that it's a couple issues in. I know they just did a standalone, so I'll probably grab that one. But my pick for best ongoing... Last chance to place your bets.
Venom?
Not long odds. Venom. I love this book. I would have put it for I had it down for best surprise of the year.
Did you when you read it? Did you say and it wasn't didn't suck? Did you say what the hey?
I said it was. I'm consistently surprised by how much I enjoy this book. It's and I know they're. I like this the new direction they're going in. I actually, despite the silliness of the 3.4 stuff, I'm looking forward to the storyline and just the fun that he's having with this character.
Excellent. Who's having with this character?
Remender writes that book.
Okay, there you go.
Who also will be taking over, he'll be taking over Secret Avengers, which will have Venom in the first arc as well.
I thought, Chris, I thought you said it was Mark Waid.
On Daredevil, yes.
Daredevil, yeah.
Oh, is that
talking about Venom.
I'm talking about Venom.
Why? Oh, that's right. You said, yeah. I don't know how I got that mixed up. Okay. It's been a long day, folks. And I've been spending most of it with Brett. You all go mush brain, too. All right. I guess that's it. That's 2011.
That's Jeff Lemire.
That's what I said. And how many members of the Fantastic Four? Anyways.
Six.
About 60 in history.
It gets higher every time you ask, though.
Yeah. So let's go. Any final thoughts on the everybody else's picks beside your own there, Keith?
Well, I went back and forth. I thought, Chris mentioned the most organic crossover. I'd have to agree, Spider-Island. Flashpoint I liked. It was a bit difficult to figure out what order to read the stories in. The trades won't help that because they'll be grouped by title, not by kind of the storyline order. But my please go away and award has to go to Hal Jordan. And I'm loving hearing this from other podcasters who are suddenly realizing that what they really don't like about Green Lantern is Hal Jordan. Because I'm liking three of the four Green Lantern books. I'm enjoying the fourth one when Hal Jordan's not in it. I'm enjoying Sinestro Green Lantern. But I never liked Hal coming back, and I wish they would put him where he was.
All right, final thoughts there on everybody else's picks, Chris.
I am surprised no one for the just go away pick the new 52. Really, I think I've dropped every last one of the 52 titles, with the exception of Jonah Hex, which I don't really even consider a 52 title. Let's stop. Let's go back to what we were. It still doesn't make sense to me, and I've read a lot of these issues. I'm tired of it.
We're tired of you. Brett?
That's probably the most down I've heard Chris on anything. Yeah, you think usually
Chris
usually
who has the voice superpower. Chris who has the superpower of liking everything he watches like or reads.
It was like the Eeyore review. Wow. I usually count on you to be the voice of positivity, Chris.
Yeah, you're stealing my gig. Brett, your turn.
Well, you know, it's interesting because with Chris mentioning that, because if I were to hand out an award for the biggest surprise of the year, I think for myself, I would actually hand it out to the DC 52 relaunch because I expected better. You know, when you're going to relaunch an entire series, an entire company worth of books, I expected there to be more books that intrigued me. I expected there to be more books that really relaunched characters, and I expected there to be more editorial oversight that caught problems and issues. But instead, it was just one big lump of, like, who knows what. And like you talk about Justice League, I mean, that's when you talk about your flagship book, and you're talking about it like, oh man, there's no way I can read that book because it's just too bad. That's, you know, that's not a good thing to say about a flagship book for a company.
Okay. My final thoughts are kind of simple. I'm just kind of doing it with some mental math and trying to remember everything. But all those picks, the four of us each picking that many categories, it seems to me the big winners, ones who were picked by more than one person, are Scott Snyder. So the big winners would be Scott Snyder, Batman Noel, and the Red Ten. So I would imagine if anybody is listening to this and looking for something they haven't tried and those that works on anything, pick up work by Snyder. Pick up the Red Ten from Comics Tribe with Cesar Feliciano on the art and Tyler James as your art writer. Or pick up Batman Noel. Maybe I'll give it another shot next year at Christmas.
We can put it in the into your reading pile for next Christmas.
We're not doing that again.
And Chris, you can put in the Marvel Zombies Christmas Carol too.
Well, maybe I'll say right off that I don't think there are any good Halloween stories.
I tell you what, Batman: The Long Halloween doesn't count. All right, let's move on then to our final thing we're doing here, and that is the Wii Views. We Talk Comics presents Wii Views. And so what we got here going is we're going to talk really quickly about some books that we've read that we don't have quite as much to say on. But we'll open up with The Last Battle as a graphic novel. It featured art by Dan Barretta, and I thought this art was really on par with Batman Noel. I think I'm a real big fan of Barretta, and I've been a long, long time. Story was all right, so I would give it a Captain Average. Brett, any thoughts quickly?
You know, I love Dan Barretta's art, but I had a problem with some of the characters. I really struggled figuring out in his faces.
Two of the characters looked very similar.
Yeah, they looked really similar, so it kind of threw me for a loop. Writing was okay. Captain Average.
Chris?
I'm going with Captain Average on this one, too. I've had this I love Dan Brennan, but I've always had a trouble connecting with his characters. I think it's the way he draws eyes. I just never get emotionally attached to anyone in his books. That said, they're always beautiful, so I always buy them. That's it.
Keith?
I think I'm with you guys. I like the art. I found the same thing with this book, with the art that I find on a lot of Breton's books, though, is that a lot of his characters look lovely when they're standing around, but action stuff isn't always as clear. And his flow, because the work is so detailed, the sense of time and motion isn't always there. I really couldn't follow, you know, the 12 different characters and the different places and the four-page chapters. I just found the story very difficult to follow. So I'm going to call it average, but if it wasn't for the art, it would definitely be in the Birdcage liner.
You know, it's interesting because I think that he's better served on a series like Nocturnals because his characters can all be radically different looking. So I think he does a better job in that case.
This particular book, it takes place in the time of the gladiator age in Rome. So certainly he spent a lot of time, I know, putting in the effort into researching it. And it's a difficult thing to do, to pull that off in comic book form. I think it's one of the more difficult things. But, yeah, I mean, Godkiller and a few other books he's done in the past you could look at. But, yeah, if anybody wants to see some Great Britain, try Nocturnals, which he wrote as well as drew, and has a character called the Gun Witch, who's just about the coolest character in the history of books. So,
although I was really hoping to see Asterix show up in this book at the last battle, but he didn't.
I thought at the beginning
I thought we could get through this without mentioning that.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
Bastard.
All right, let's move on to another book. Let's talk about The Immortal Demon in Blood. It's a samurai book, had an interesting concept, but ultimately, while the concept was interesting, I just didn't think the book itself was good enough for me to come back to. Not that I think it's bad, not good enough to come back to, so that leaves it in the Birdcage liner for me. Brett?
It's poop. Ian Edgerton is crap. I hate him. I don't ever want to read another book that he writes. It's poop.
Chris?
I thought the American-style art really clashed with the storyline they were trying to tell. I think if the art was more of a manga style, it would have been readable. But as it is right now, Birdcage.
And maybe if Ian Edgerton hadn't written it.
I didn't even get that far into it, man. It just didn't work.
Keith.
Birdcage.
That's all we need on that one. Let's go into Memorial. Memorial, a book from Image. I enjoyed this book an awful lot. I didn't feel like I was necessarily the target audience, but I was the I really enjoyed it. I think this is a really good all-ages, all-gender book, fantastical style, very interesting. I would give it a, like I say, I'm not sure I'd come back to it because I'm normally from the target audience, but I think it's really, really good, and I would certainly give it Catwoman's Meow, as we give our top category. Brett?
You know, I'll admit, I was, when I first started reading this, I thought that it was just going to be another random crap average book, but I was pretty much won over. I thought it was an interesting story, and especially considering some of the stuff that we have been reading, it did stand out for me. So I would actually give it a Catwoman's Meow.
Captain Average. I found the cliches, the mysterious doorway that I've never seen before, yet I walk down the street every day, just annoyed the hell out of me. The art was nice, but it wasn't spectacular. It complemented the story, but I just didn't give a damn at the end. So, Captain Average.
I'm going to say Meow. And there, it does have some cliches in there, but I was intrigued by the characters, and it has a talking cat. So that's
good. Always a winner. A captain talking cat meow. And, all right, well, let's move on to the next book. What was it called? The Activity. The Activity. Thank you. I didn't know what was going on in this book. Didn't understand the characters or what was happening. I didn't think that the narrative was particularly good. Even the art's maybe fine for the book, but I felt like the pacing and the narrative on this was off. So I didn't really connect to it. So for me, it's a lining the birdcage. It is that Black Canary birdcage liner. Brett.
You know, I'll admit there were a couple of times where I wasn't sure I was following the plot, but I think by the end I pretty much had it, and I was kind of intrigued by the story. So for me, you know, I mean, I'm not 100% sure that I'll like it when I get to four or five issues down the road, but I'm going to say right now it's a Catwoman's Meow.
Catwoman's Meow for me. Really liked this book. I do have one criticism. That it kind of felt like a 25-cent preview issue or a free comic book day thing. The fact that nothing happened in this book was kind of distracting. But that said, I did attach myself to a couple of the characters. I am looking forward to something happening in it. So, Cat's Meow, I'm buying the next one.
I'm going to say Catwoman's Meow, too. I really enjoyed this book. And it has a bit of cliche. Certainly the one member dies of the team And then, you know, the new member joins just as the story begins is a pretty old cliche as far as, you know, these special forces type teams go. The art style, it jumps a little bit because it has these kind of bridging text pieces that are placing it in time and space and moving them around with GPS coordinates, that kind of thing. But I don't know, I just enjoyed it, and I thought it was telling a different kind of story. After reading a lot of superhero stuff the last little while, to get a spy story was interesting.
Okay. Kind of interesting what we're seeing so far. We had a book like Memorial, which really is, we're really high on as a group as a whole, and a book like The Last Battle, or which we're really average on, and, you know, everybody's really down on, pretty much on down on the Samurai book, Mortal Demon in the Blood, and then you get this book where you had everything. You had two people who were giving it a Catwoman's Meow, one person giving it a Birdcage liner, one person giving it a Captain Average. So that's
No, actually, I thought it was three Catwoman's Meows.
Oh, did you give it a Catwoman's Meow?
Yeah, I did.
I thought you gave it the Average. Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, either way, so that's interesting that it that I didn't connect to it in the same way that you guys did. Let's move on to our next book.
I'm gonna have to put on my crash helmet for this one.
Well, do you know what we're getting? Okay, what are we getting to?
Oh, I'm pretty sure we're getting to the Defenders.
No, we're saving that. That's our that's our main event, because that's going to be the longest discussion. So we're talking about a book that came out on the day that.
That's right. I forgot this.
A book that came out today, a day that we're recording. Recording this on a Wednesday, new comic book day, and we all took time to read the Ed Brubaker, because everybody's a big fan of him, and Sean Phillips' new book from Image called Fatale. And I'm a sucker for a good noir story. This had that noir setting, a nice mystery. Of course, the art and the dialogue, the pacing, all tremendous. The mystery I'm wondering about. I think the characters are a little cliched at this point, but they're just trying to. It's just an establishing story, and I know this is going to be excellent. And I would give it a Catwoman's Meow. I'm looking forward to number two. Brett.
Cliches, check. Ed Brubaker, check. Sean Phillips, check. Catwoman's Meow, check.
Chris.
Catwoman's Meow. I always enjoy Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips stuff. I probably enjoyed this less than Incognito, but more than the last criminal arc. But it's going to be right underneath Invincible every month until it's over. I love it.
Is it a limited or is it an ongoing? I think it's ongoing, isn't it? I didn't catch that. That's one thing that might be a fail.
Yeah, I'm not. I think it's ongoing.
I think so as well. Keith, your thoughts?
Also, Catwoman's Meow. I really like this book, and I have issues with some of Brubaker's superhero stuff, but there is something he does just better than anyone, and that's noir. And I love this book. It's so cool, and every half dozen or eight pages, there's a real twist to the story, and it jumps around in time and really developing some interesting stuff. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
There's something in there where I'm just going, I gotta know. I don't get this, but I gotta know. It just has me so anxious to read that next issue. You know, I think we knew when we picked this one out that this was a book everybody was going to like because of the creators on it. And if we didn't, it would have been more interesting to have all of us say that we like it, which is extremely rare. But you got to admit, the best book I've ever written? No. But a good, solid read that I know I'm going to enjoy and we're all obviously recommending? Absolutely.
I'm really looking for – I think it's one of those books that I'm going to read it as it comes out, but then when it does wrap up its storyline or its full run or whatever, then I think I'm going to look forward to going back and reading it all as a compiled edition as well.
All right, let's move on to the last book.
All right, Crash Helmet on. Yes.
Now you put the Crash Helmet on. Actually, it's two books in one because we read issue number one and issue number two that came out today of The Defenders, and we didn't like this as much as we liked Fatale, to be certain. Who would like to open up on this one? Because I think this one's actually going to have the more serious discussion going for it.
I got too much, man. Somebody else take it.
Didn't want to open either. I have too much.
I'll start because I haven't read a lot of Marvel over the past few years. So I'm hoping that Chris or Brett could help me with where on earth this version of Iron Fist came from, because it is absolutely nothing like anything I ever read. And yes, I've been out for quite a few years. But I just didn't recognize this character in the least. It's to the point where I was trying to figure out if it was even like a different character calling himself Iron Fist. Is there?
Did you recognize this Doctor Strange? I know that it felt like the Iron Fist was the most jarring, but
I've seen versions of. I mean, Warren Ellis's Doctor Strange was kind of like this, and I've seen a couple of versions of like of Strange that were more of a, you know, the you know, self-absorbed kind of dickish Doctor Strange. So I've seen that. I don't know where. What kind of arc has been happening for Iron Fist to seem, you know, 10 years younger than he was last time?
If you're referring to being a new billionaire, that actually has been taking place in the Avengers and in his own series. Other than that, you know, the way this character acts, him getting his ass kicked by absolutely everybody, this is a new version.
Let's talk a little bit about this characterization. Basically, what you had was a character that is like a man-child, is almost the best way to describe him. You know, reading comic books, saying things like cool and ass a lot.
Boy, did he ever say ass a lot.
it is Matt Fraction's favorite word. It shows up
Iron
all the time.
Iron Fist ass.
Yeah, big ass sword from... it was one of... All the characterizations were bad. I mean, obviously, I'm lining the birdcage with both the first two issues. The first issue would have been probably runner-up. Well, actually, now that you mentioned Holy Terror, but it wouldn't have. But it would have been otherwise probably my second place runner-up for worst issue of the year. This is, I think, is awful. Now, Iron Fist, if we're going to talk about Starfire and Catwoman being sluts, let's not be misogynistic here. Let's talk about the character of Doctor Strange and Iron Fist being a slut too, male sluts. Let's talk about the almost wink-wink nature of the character of, hey, this guy's just like you guys. This, instead of real characterization, it's he likes comic books too. He's like you guys, and from Matt Fraction, the writer. Just really... really, really weak dialogue and presentation of the characters, saving him from having to actually understand the characters, which it felt like he had no take on. Of course, he should be familiar with Iron Fist, having written him a lot in the past. So that's my take on Iron Fist. One other thing I'm going to say about Iron Fist is there's an action scene in here in Iron Fist in the first issue. I have actually a lot more to say on Iron Fist. Like I said, I can go off on this. Now, Iron Fist is growing up my favorite my favorite comic book growing up was Power Man and Iron Fist. My single favorite. My favorite hero was Spider-Man. My favorite comic book was Power Man and Iron Fist. I'm a huge, huge fan of those characters. So when I'm reading this, I see there's a point where he's on the plane. He's attacked by these assassins. No explanation how they got on board. He kicks their ass for about a panel and a half. No explanation why they're trying to kill him. And then they never mention them again. That's the weakest storytelling you can possibly get. It's like an action scene thrown in just to have an action scene with no context or meaning to it. It's really poor writing. And then right at the end, there's a point where the end of Iron Fist number one, he gets shot. And you're going, again, it was much like we were talking about Captain America on that Avengers Extinction, which came out today, number two, and we refused to read it because the first one blew so much. It's the same thing. We know he's not getting killed, so Iron Fist got shot. He's dead thing doesn't work. And, of course, then it opens up with issue two with an internal monologue from him going, ow, 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 that really hurt. Shitty.
Well, it didn't help that he was literally on the cover of number two, which they showed at the end
of number one.
So, I mean, you know, it's not like – I mean, yeah, we talked earlier in our deaths episode about quickest deaths. Iron Fist may now officially have the quickest, because I think he died in the last panel of the first issue and was back by, like, you know,
by the cover of the next issue.
Yeah,
brutal. Anybody want to comment on anything I just said there?
Not really, but I do have a question for you guys on this. Was this a humor book?
I thought it was.
Was it supposed to be funny?
I kind of got a Next Wave vibe from it, but it's not as clever as Next Wave, because Matt Fraction is not the writer that Warren Ellis is.
See, I do have something to say in that regard.
Go ahead.
Now, The Defenders back in 2005, they released a Defenders book, and it was by Giffen DeMatteis, provided I'm probably mispronouncing that, and McGuire. That same team of one of our favorite Justice League runs took on a 5-issue arc of The Defenders.
And that Justice League run was a straight-ahead comedy book.
Yes, and so was this Defenders. It was flat-out comedy. It was the Namor, it was the Hulk, it was Doctor Strange, it was the Silver Surfer. Now, Silver Surfer was barely in it because he was, like, stoned half the time. The Incredible Hulk was a goofball character. You had Namor sniping at everybody. Because he didn't feel like he belonged there. Doctor Strange was always jibber jabbering in his like holier than thou random like created Stan Lee words. And the thing was that I saw those elements of that in this book.
And you enjoyed that one?
Well, it was what it was.
Okay.
You know, I'm not saying that I loved it, but I'm not saying I hated it. It was really overwritten, but
not anyways, as good as the Justice League, but
yeah. Okay. But so when I see elements of that, like I'll see Namor, you know, kind of saying like, oh, I don't know why I ever worked with you. I certainly don't know why I'm still working with you, you know? And so I see those elements where he's trying to bring in those elements of humor, but then like it's one panel. And so there is no like connecting, you know, motif there. It's just kind of like, oh, you know, here's a little bit that I took from this run and sprinkled it in. And then the rest of it seems to be serious, but it's just seriously bad.
You know, the first issue I ever read of The Defenders was issue 125, because it had this gorgeous painted cover. I can't recall who did it, but it was just amazing. I do recall it was written by Roy Thomas, and it featured a group of freak Defenders, I think, as Chris had described it, Gargoyle and Beast and Angel and that type of thing.
Is Valkyrie?
Valkyrie was in there, yeah. I was looking at this, I'm going, okay, is the Hulk part of this group or not? Because he shows up and goes, I got a problem you need you guys to solve for me, and then he's not around. He's not around issue number two. So is he or isn't he? Why is this group together? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the original lineup of Defenders is the Hulk, Namor, Doctor Strange, and the Silver Surfer.
Yeah, but is he in this one? Is he a regular member of this one?
Oh, I just got the sense that it was a cameo.
Okay. The Silver Surfer character, I don't really know why he's on Earth, and he seemed different. I did not like the art on Silver Surfer at all. Looked like a little boy. But I'm just going to get back to, you have these characters. Namor really never works. He's a character with so much potential that never works. The characterization of She-Hulk, I'm not familiar with this Betty Banner because I haven't been reading it lately. This is awful. It's certainly not the Betty Banner I know. It's certainly not as good as Jennifer Walters as a She-Hulk that I remember. So why would I want this? The characterization for me, again, terrible. But why did these guys come? I don't understand. Okay, they're helping the Hulk. But okay, go ahead. Keith, you look like you want to say something there.
I think that was one of my big problems with issue one is, when you ask why these characters are together, why is Iron Fist with them? Because they come up with this convoluted, we need to borrow your airplane explanation, like, because you've got a really fast airplane. Well, yeah. I'm pretty sure Doctor Strange can teleport.
And I've teleport across. I've seen Doctor Strange in Infinity Gauntlet and stories like that teleport across the universe in a half a second.
And you have the Silver Surfer.
Yeah, exactly.
not why do you need an airplane? Going on in this comic book, I don't believe Doctor Strange is the Sorcerer Supreme anymore. So he's lost some power.
So you've still got the Silver Surfer.
Well, but you know what? If I'm not a regular reader, you've got to explain that to me. Now, if I'm not a regular reader, that's a fail that you don't tell me that. Because otherwise, the Doctor Strange I'm familiar with, you're not giving me. But like I say, I don't understand why this group is together. I mean, say what the X-Men, I understand why they're a group. The Fantastic Four, I understand why they're a group. They're a family. X-Men is a group of outcasts who are shunned by society. Avengers is a group that is band together to face all the greatest threats with the, because they're the greatest power. Same thing, you can look at the, you know, you can look at DC and you can say Justice League is the same idea. You can say Justice League Dark takes care of the sorcery underground part of the universe. Justice League International is kind of the corporate team. So what is this? What is this team's purpose? What is their, why are they a team? They don't have that. Give them that. Give them something. Just a bunch of guys who all of a sudden are together. And it's not like they're having a miniseries. It's a regular series. You don't do that. That's, again, that's bad storytelling. It's bad. It's bad plotting. It's bad characterization. It's bad everything. It's bad storytelling in general.
I think the reason that they're a team is because they're the Defenders, and this is the de facto or Defenders team. You know?
Okay, so
and
what was the original Defenders team's purpose? I'm not sure I even knew that, but
no,
certainly,
no, you probably,
I certainly don't
no,
know
maybe
this.
You
I'm
did,
sure
but
there might have been one, though, but
yeah,
there isn't to this.
They probably brought that up, and they and even in the 5-issue limited series, they certainly brought up why he needed.
As I remember, the original Defenders were a team because they were formed a team. They were like the other really powerful guys that didn't fit into the Avengers, and so that at least gave them a purpose. That was kind of my feeling on them. But this doesn't even have that. There's nothing. There's no. Okay, so they were a team before, but what?
Well, it's always this Doctor Strange.
You've got to have a purpose. If you're Justice League Dark, like I say, or Justice League International, or Justice League, all of those have a separate purpose within the DC Universe, which I don't love what they did with New 52, but I can give them that. I can't give Marvel anything for this.
Well, I mean, Doctor Strange brings them all together for some Doctor Strange esoteric reason. But, you know, the truth is that I don't care why they were brought together in this book, because by the end of issue two and your big, you know, like caption for next issue, uh-oh, you know, and it's like, I'm just left looking at it like, you know.
Yeah, something bad's going to happen next issue. Uh-oh, that's their tagline to get you to buy the next issue.
Something bad already happened.
Yeah, the first two issues.
It's funny that you're objecting to this stuff, yet what struck me as amazingly bad about this was
I've
getting his ass kicked by Man-Tiger.
Yeah. Don't forget that. I didn't understand that. But, I mean, at least they said, like, all of a sudden I look up. I remember I was reading this beside Brett. And I looked up, and he's looking over my shoulder, and I go, when did they imprison them all? I don't get – they said that the Silver Surfer was imprisoned. They're like, this is the most dangerous man on the planet. They've imprisoned the Silver Surfer. But they didn't say how. All of a sudden, he was just surrounding this force field, and you're like, man, they beat the Silver Surfer. The Silver Surfer, who's not afraid of Galactus, is beat by these Man-Tigers. Like, did he also lose some powers? Is he no longer the Silver Surfer Supreme?
I think
what
he
the
was
hell
beat
is
by,
going on here?
I think he was beat by Prester John, but the truth of the matter is it doesn't even matter if he was. At this point,
I was skimming it so much that I couldn't.
But still, this is a fight scene on par with Grifter, because quite honestly, there are tigers all over the place that I don't know who the hell they're talking about. They're going to different places, like characters are dropping, they're popping up again. I have no idea what's going on or who's getting beaten. And then you turn the page and everybody's locked up. And it's just like, what? When did that happen?
This disco goggles to, you know.
Yeah, to Iron Fist.
And when did Iron Fist get a white uniform? When did Iron Fist get a white uniform, white and gold instead of green and gold?
He said that for quite a while.
I believe that was in the Avengers.
Yeah, he said that for a while.
Just doing him wrong. I kind of like.
Not to be worried about.
I kind of like them both. I was just curious. Not that it matters, affects his character in any way. Keith, your next thoughts on this? Any more to say? Because I have more to say. I'm not done. I have so much to rant about on this.
This is a great example. You were talking about Namor, and this is a fantastic example of something that I wish was just a hard and fast editorial rule, that characters, they can have their own book and they can be on a team, but they can't be on more than one team. And Namor's been standing around in the background of the X-Men for months, doing absolutely nothing. And this was a great opportunity to write him out of the X-Men books, where, as I said, he does absolutely nothing, and put him somewhere where he actually belongs. He's only in the X books because he's technically a mutant.
He's the first mutant.
His little wings on his feet make him technically a mutant because Atlanteans don't have those.
Yeah, technically, he's the first mutant, isn't he? Isn't that the tagline?
That's what they call him, but Wolverine's older than him, so I don't really know how that works anymore. he's the first mutant that we created, but we never called him a mutant for 60 years. Yeah, and again, the one thing I'm not looking forward to from this upcoming Venom story is that Red Hulk is in it. I've already taken a pass on the first arc of Avenging Spider-Man because Red Hulk's in it. Every time one of these two Red Hulks turns up, I just get angry all over again at the stupidity of these characters. And
we'll go into that a little more in depth. What is it about them that pisses you off? What is the stupidity you're talking about?
Well, they turn up and they're red. Okay, so there's this other She-Hulk. That's fine. And then there's a moment where
She-Hulk still exist?
I actually don't know where Jennifer Walters is right now. Because I was out of Marvel for quite a while. But then there's this moment of, oh yeah, it's Betty Banner. Oh yeah, that's stupid. And I have the same every time I see the Red Hulk, and I have a moment where I've forgotten that it's, you know, Thunderbolt Ross. And then I'm reminded, like, oh yeah, it's because it's stupid. That's why I keep forgetting this.
You know what? I hate the fact that they have to take every single character that's a sidekick or a supporting character, and at some point in time over the course of the career, they have to be a supervillain. It's just ridiculous. It's one of those, again, weak writing, weak house of ideas bullshit. This is, and it's not just them. It's just bad. Chris, and what? Say something else.
My points were taken. I actually like. Excuse me, Matt Fraction. Everything is written except this book. It's almost like he went, you know what? I'm writing too many books right now. Why don't I just do a humor book? And that way I don't have to plot it at all. This is where the talents of Slott and Peter David and John Byrne really kind of shine, where, you know, they put some thought into the humor books and they came off. At the end of these, as I said, I came out questioning whether they were trying to be funny with this or not, because their jokes with Dr. Strange sitting on the train and like that didn't make me smile. They didn't make me laugh. They were just so bad I was questioning, is this actually part of the story?
Maybe that's not what Matt Fraction should be writing. Maybe that's not, you know, but
but he has to take it more seriously. I think this is just a cop out that, you know, he really thought that he could get away with something here. It would be easy, another couple bucks in his bank account to have a book that he didn't have to plan, and he didn't have respect for what he was trying to do, and it failed miserably.
Okay, let's get into that a little bit here, because this, you kind of summed up, and Brett's going, let's end the podcast. I'm going, no, I told you, I warned you, I had a lot to say about this book, and that's why I'm saving it. Let's talk a little bit about this, because you're right. It is, the point is, this to me is, this book summarizes very much what's wrong with Marvel and DC and today, and that, okay, instead of having an idea for a book, we have a book that needs an idea. And we're going to put out a lot of them, and quality be damned. And there's so many books and so few creators capable of doing this many books that I think this is exactly why it is that every time I seem to get excited about one of those two companies, I start to lose my momentum as well, because they can't sustain everything they're trying to do, and they don't have any wish to try. Like I say, big difference between an idea for a book and having a book that needs an idea. Brett?
Well, you know, I would love to know something about this book. I would love to know if this was something that Marvel said, we need a new Defenders book, and went to Matt Fraction. Or I would like to know if Matt Fraction said to himself, I'd love to write the Defenders, and went to Marvel with it.
I would love to know that too, but certainly I know which way it feels, and either way, I know that if he is doing that, maybe he should say, I'm going to write one or two other less books so I can concentrate on this and give it the attention it deserves. Because it certainly doesn't feel like it got any attention or love or respect, as Chris put it, at all. It was just feels like a cash grab. And it also has the writing style that he is not just him, this self-aware writing style where he's going, I'm a really good comic writer. And you guys know I'm a really good comic writer, and I'm writing a comic book for you guys that know that. And that's what it feels like. And this reminds me of, actually, you'll remember the Scream movies. They were self-aware. And the first Scream movie came out was self-aware about horror films and made fun of itself while also respecting the medium. it worked, and then you that brought about an entire. This felt like Scream to me, but it didn't feel like Scream 1. It felt like Scream 3, where it's this idea of writing it and being self-aware and having so many other movies and books of this style and this wink-wink at the camera that I felt like he was doing is something that I think I get a lot of in today's writers, and I find it really annoying. Because instead of concentrating on really good storytelling and really good characterization, you get away with making a cheap joke or really basic characterization and thinking you're being really, really hip. And so it reminds me of the later end of the 90s horror movies that were influenced by the first Scream.
Yeah, and that too clever writing style is turning up in a lot of stuff. It's one of my complaints in the New 52 was the amount of characters that complained about their own code names. And it's like, oh, that's a stupid name that was invented 30 years ago. Well, then don't use it. Like, no one's forcing you to. She doesn't have to be called Wonder Girl. In Teen Titans was the one that she keeps complaining about. Don't call her Wonder Girl. Well, call yourself something else. Put on a T-shirt that has an M on it, and they're going to call you something else.
Yeah.
But it's that, yeah, it's that clever, clever kind of writing of, you know, it's. I always say that there's a big difference between being clever and being funny. And I don't think Matt Fraction knows the difference.
See, and that was my argument with Aquaman as well. I thought that one was like trying to be way too clever for its own good.
All right. Well, I don't know. I don't have anything else to say. So anybody else want to wrap up some final thoughts?
I'm desperate for the moment.
Can we complain about the art now?
Oh, yeah. Now we can move on to the art. I complained about the Silver Surfer. Oh, my God.
I've been desperate for the moment where Chris says, well, I didn't think it was that bad.
But no, this book was that bad. I think everybody, because this first 2 inches, Bert Kalinger, everybody thinks it was that bad. That says something.
No,
avoid this book. And
Catwoman's me out for me.
correct me if I'm wrong, Keith, but this book had quite a bit of buzz on. What have you been hearing on your Twitter and your web surfing about this book? What seems to be the general feeling out there from the reading and critical public?
Fairly positive from what I've seen. Part of that is that part of it is just the Matt Fractionitis of, you know, we do the same thing with Grant Morrison that, you know, we're all pretty down on Grant Morrison's writing right now, but there is this general feeling of, you know, I'm supposed to like him, so I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a hot writer, so I'm going to like it regardless, because that's the cool thing to do.
I did the same thing with Wonder Woman, though. You know, I going into that, I wanted to like it because it was Azzarello, and it stinks.
Yeah. All right, well...
Keith, before we exit on this, Keith, I want you to go, I'm sure that you follow Matt Fraction, so you need to get on the Twitter... this, and you need to find out the answer to my question.
Yeah, you're responsible for finding out if he went to them or they went to him. And no matter what, though, to me, it doesn't forgive what happened. So,
oh no, it's still bad. No matter how like it just allows me a place to focus my anger.
I like
to remember this for next year's We Talk Beats, though. It was that.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Let's make a note that we have a runner. In this category already.
Of worst series, yeah. Yes. It is.
We can't allow ourselves to forget how bad this book was.
Well, I will try, though.
Yeah.
I will try. All right, final thoughts for the week on anything and everything. Plugs or anything else you want to get off your chest there. Let's start with Keith.
All right, well, check out our blog, wetalkpodcast.com. And I've been blogging about the new universe, which is 27 years young. I love that series. So I've got my first installment up. Second installment should be up actually by the time you hear this podcast. So check that out. I'm doing a series of four, and part four will have a very special personal memento I have of the new universe. And you can follow me on Twitter at CubReporterK or email me at Keith@WeTalkPodcast.com.
Okay, I'm Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com. Yes.
He did it, folks. He did it.
And he has nothing else to say.
Nothing else to say on the week. Okay,
that's anything else I can add after saying my email address is only tempting myself to screw it up again.
There you go. It's just quit it. Well, yeah, well, it's good.
All right, Brett, your turn.
Well, let's see now. My final comments are just going to be that quite frankly, I really hate the X-Men and I wish that they'd go away. And then I'm going to just say that it's Brett_WeTalk. And of course, Brett@WeTalkPodcast.com. Actually, today or within the last couple of days, I just received a copy of Zombie Outlaw. So that's a comic that we'll be reviewing in the next couple of weeks. And we'll be talking with the creator as well, coming up. So we'll look forward to that.
And I'm Mo. That's M-O at We Talk Podcast. And of course, Mo_WeTalk on Twitter. And, I want to say, Brett and I have talked about in the past, a podcast we're doing for Janie Lane, singer-songwriter, lead singer of Warrant and Saints of the Underground, many other projects, Jabberwocky and such in the past. We talked about he passed away on August 11th, 2011, and we were doing a podcast for him. On February 1st would have been his 48th birthday, and that will be the day that podcast will come out, be available on We Talk Podcasts. It'll be a really, really long one. We're looking probably at 3+ hours, so it'll be broken up into a couple parts and a couple different different types of quality, but we hope everybody will check that out. We've really poured our hearts into it. And other than that, if anybody out there wants to defend Defenders, please talk to us on Twitter. Send us an email. We'll read it on the air. I do want that other point of view because we all agreed. Same thing if there was a book that we all loved or anything else that you disagree with. Your opinions and everybody's opinion, that's what makes this all interesting. And other than that, look out for really soon. We talked about the Red 10. We have talked to Tyler James and Cesar Feliciano. So you will get a chance to hear them talk in depth about that series. And please go check them out one more time. Thank you very much, everyone. OUT.